Good morning, folks. This is Amy, and I'm just sneaking on the radio here to thank all of our donors out there who have contributed to the Fall On Air Fund Drive. That's putting the D in the fun that we have here at WGDR, WGDH, with some dolores, some dollars, some donations. Our listeners have been so generous. We have actually exceeded our goal. Thank you so much. We have new sustaining donors. We have new first-time donors. Thank you, everybody out there. You are, I know it, the greatest. We'll be back in just a few seconds with Amy's Kids Show.
This is WGDR Plainfield and WGDH Hardwick.
Community support for Amy's Kids Show is provided in part by Woodbury Mountain Toys, featuring a selection of toys and games for kids of all ages. Located at 24 State Street in Montpelier, Vermont. More information at woodburymountaintoys.com. Come in and play with us.
We bring you the following show with the intention of providing a wide range of voices about the issues of the day. We encourage listeners to critically examine claims and other statements.
Good morning, folks. Rise and shine. This is Amy, and it's time for Amy's Kids Show, and I am so, so super excited. I mean, you know me. I'm always excited to come in here and do Amy's Kids Show, but today is a super special day because I have, for the first time ever on Amy's Kids Show, this is now over 2 years, 2.5 years, that it's been since I have not been able to do this. I'm so excited. I have a live human being in the radio station today. And not only is he a live human being, he is an author. And not only is he an author of what is now my favorite book, Rosie and the Little Folk, but he's an author of 3 books, and we're going to talk about that, and he's going to read the next chapter. Alec Hastings, would you come up to the mic and say good morning?
Good morning, Amy. Good morning, listeners. I'm honored to be here.
Fantastic. I am so honored to have you. How do you like it out here in the station?
It's very exciting. I've never been in a radio station before.
Really? Oh, this is so cool. So it's a first time for you and a first time for me.
Yes.
Oh, fantastic. So we're here at the radio station, and we're going to be sharing with Alec today his second story in this book, Rosie and the Little Folk. Can you tell us what you're going to read for us today?
Today's story is Rosie and the Missing Mrs. Millicent, and I think we're getting close to Halloween, aren't we?
Yes,
this is going to be fitting right in with a Halloween theme today.
Oh, that's kind of how I planned it.
Yes, nice planning.
I was thinking the big Blue Hubbard squash I just brought into my house, so it was time for that, and we celebrated her last week. Is she going to come back, the Blue Hubbard squash?
I think so, and to go along with the Halloween theme, there's a haunted house in this story.
Ooh.
So, wait for that.
And the Mrs. Millicent.
Mrs. Millicent really is Mrs. Churchill from last week. You'll find out why she's called Mrs. Millicent this week. It's in the story.
Oh, fantastic.
Yes, Tug Twizzlestick Churchill. That's his doing.
I just love the names. And so we have Rosie, who's our heroine, and she's my new role model. I want to be more like her every day. We have the Great Blue Hubbard Squash, and then we have leprechauns, right?
Yes. So he's a modern leprechaun. He wears a Celtics shirt, Backfire Bob, but he is nevertheless an Irish leprechaun from the old country. I don't know how he ended up in Vermont. Perhaps he has cousins here.
Oh, perhaps he has cousins. Ooh, a little foreshadowing there. We definitely have an author in the house, guys. Let's celebrate leprechauns, and then we'll be back for a story. Thanks for joining us.
Shady nook, one moonlight night, a leprechaun I spied, with scarlet coat and cap of green, a krushkin by his side. 'Twas tick-tack-tick, his hammer went upon a tiny shoe, and I laughed to think of a purse of gold. But the fairy was laughing too. Step and beating heart, quite softly I drew nigh. There was mischief in his merry face, a twinkle in his eye. He hammered and sang with tiny voice, and drank his mountain dew. And I laughed to think he was caught at last. But the fairy was laughing too. Quick as thought I seized the elf, "Your fairy purse," I cried. "The purse," he said, "is in the hand of the lady by your side." I turned to look, the elf was gone. Oh, what was I to do? Ah, I laughed to think what a fool I'd been. But the fairy was laughing too.
This second story in Rosie and the Little Folk is called Rosie and the Missing Mrs. Millicent, Chapter 1. If you read the story, Backfire Bob and the Blue Pumpkin Girl, you may remember that an angelic little girl named Rosalind, you can call her Rosie, she won't mind, lived with a not-so-very-awful foster mother named Mrs. Millicent Churchill. Mrs. Churchill made Rosie work very hard. She also smoked nasty, smelly cigarettes and repeated herself annoyingly. But she did cook yummy dinners, especially Rosie's favorite, a souffle made with cheese puffs, and she never beat Rosie with a stick. So she was, you see, not so very awful. Mrs. Millicent was, however, becoming forgetful. The sad fact was this. Mrs. Millicent was getting old and a little dotty. Some mornings she would come into the kitchen where Rosie was scrambling eggs and feeding the cats and washing up last night's dishes, and she would be wearing a blue sock with white polka dots on one foot and an orange sock with green stripes on the other foot, or some other silly mismatch. This was before wearing different colored socks was a style, and maybe it wouldn't be upsetting to you, but it was to Mrs. Millicent, because the ladies in her bridge club came to play cards on Thursdays, and they had stared at the mismatched socks the last time they had come, and Mrs. Millicent had blushed when she realized her mistake, just like she did when she was in fourth grade and forgot how to spell the word gizmo. Mrs. Millicent had also started doing other odd little sillies. Yesterday, before breakfast, she had taken the orange juice from the refrigerator and begun watering the African violets. But that wasn't nearly as bad as what had happened a month ago on July 4th. That day, Mrs. Millicent had run one of her husband Joe's T-shirts up the flagpole on the front lawn. Rosie noticed that most of their neighbors flew the American flag on the 4th. No one had a T-shirt celebrating Sam's Cider Donuts. Mr. Churchill had died several years earlier, which was just as well, because he might have been mortified by his wife's next step. After raising the flag, Mrs. Millicent had joined the Independence Day parade on Main Street, carrying her pocketbook and attired in nothing but her pink underpants, her brassiere, and her stylish Italian high heels. It was too hot, she said, for anything else. Now it was August, and the hubbub of Independence Day had died down. Rosie was hoping that if Mrs. Millicent did anything odd today, it would be like watering the plants with orange juice, which seemed to perk them up, and not like joining the parade in her almost birthday suit. In the meantime, Rosie was making Tug Twizzle Stick Churchill another pancake, and Tug, who was making yum noises and chewing a large bite of his first cake, was also looking out the kitchen window with a vacant but contented look on his large round face. Tug, said Rosie, would you mind knocking on your mother's bedroom door and seeing if she wants some breakfast? Tug nodded and mumbled, yum, okay, because his mouth was full, and then he tromped upstairs to his mother's room. Tug, if you remember, used to tease Rosie, but Backfire Bob had made one of Tug's mean pranks backfire, and Tug found out for the first time what it was like to have his own feelings hurt. It felt awful, as I'm sure you know, and after that he refused to go along with Alexander Foolscap in teasing Rosie or pulling Tom Hanks' tail. Tom Hanks was Mrs. Millicent's cat, and he did not like anyone yanking on his tail any more than you or I would. Tug tapped on the door of his mother's room. No sound came from inside. Then he knocked loudly. No sound. Mrs. Millicent, he inquired. Still, no sound. Mrs. Millicent Churchill was a formal kind of person, and she insisted that her son refer to her not as Mom or Mother, but as Mrs. Churchill, or, if only Rosie was present, as Mrs. Millicent. Roused from his usual placidity, that means being as calm as a cow chewing its cud, Tug now hammered on the door and shouted, Mrs. Churchill, Mrs. Churchill, are you in there? When excited, Tug adopted his mother's habit of saying things twice, and now he hollered down the stairs. No answer, Rosie, no answer. I'm coming, Rosie called to Tug. Rosie slid her spatula beneath the last pancake on the griddle and flipped it neatly onto Tug's plate, which now held another stack of three. She topped the stack with a pat of butter, drowned it in maple syrup, and set the plate on the counter. Then she climbed the stairs and stood beside Tug, who looked worried. Do you think she's gone, Rosie? I mean, do you think she passed away while we were sleeping? Mrs. Millicent Churchill was quite old, and she did smoke nasty cigarettes, so this was a possibility. But Rosie thought Mrs. Churchill's disappearance might have more to do with her getting a little dotty. I don't think so, Tug, she comforted. Maybe she just had another one of her spells and wandered off in the middle of the night. I bet she's at Santino Tulipello's flower nursery right now, looking for a new perennial for the garden under her bedroom window. Santino will probably ask his daughter Michelina to drive her home. Well, should we at least look? Asked Tug, pointing to the door. I suppose we must. She opened the door bravely while Tug stood back and closed his eyes. Then Rosie entered the room. Chapter 2. Is she dead? Asked Tug, with his eyes still closed. Rosie looked carefully about the room. Mrs. Churchill's rosewater sat on her dressing table as usual. The dress she had worn yesterday was hung over the back of a chair. The bedclothes were rumpled, but Mrs. Churchill was not in the bed. Instead, Rosie saw a piece of paper with familiar handwriting. "No," said Rosie, "she's not here, but someone has left a note." She unfolded the sheet of paper and read aloud. "Dear Rosie, Miss Goody Two Shoes, I have Mrs. Churchill and am hiding her where you will never find her. She is okay, but rather upset about the spiders in her bedroom. Also, she is getting grouchy because she has run out of cigarettes. Bring $500 in cash and a 5-pound bag of gummy bears to the abandoned house at the end of Bilker Street tomorrow just after sunset. Enter the house from the porch, and you will receive further instructions in the hall. I will let Mrs. Churchill go as soon as I am safe. Don't talk to the police, or you will never see your crummy foster mother again. Yours in evil and crime, guess who? P.S. You can get the cash by bringing Mrs. Churchill's silver and her antique candlesticks to Skechers Pawn Shop on Main Street. Do not fail." Tug looked at Rosie with dismay. "What do we do?" he asked. Rosie thought. Then she thought some more. She recognized the handwriting, and she knew this was the work of Alexander Foolscap, her foster brother, and the architect of many mean tricks that made her life miserable. She was puzzled, however, because Alex, like Tug, had changed. He hadn't played a mean trick in ages, and she found it hard to believe that he would have started again. "I guess we'll have to go to the pawn shop and see if we can raise the ransom money," she said finally. "Why don't you finish those pancakes? I'll go out and pick bugs off the potato plants, and then we'll gather the silver and the candlesticks and go to Skechers." In the garden, Rosie found more of the Colorado potato bug's orange eggs on the undersides of the plant's leaves. She also found some of the squishy red larvae munching on the leaves, and she put all of these in a jar with soapy water to kill them. Icky! She hated to hurt any living creature, even nasty-looking bugs. But if she didn't, her foster family would have no potatoes. And when Tug wasn't eating pancakes, he practically lived on potatoes. When she was done picking the bugs off the potatoes, she sat down on the stone in the middle of the garden and thought about Alexander Foolscap. She was shocked that he had done this. Yes, he had teased and bullied her once upon a time, but that had all changed. She had sat in this very garden one day, wishing for a friend who could do something about Alexander, when suddenly one appeared. His name was Backfire Bob, and he had made Alexander's mean tricks backfire. Like Tug, Alexander's henchman at the time, Alexander learned what it was like to be the butt of his own jokes. But what really caused him to see the error of his ways was when one of his pranks didn't backfire. He dumped a bucket of yuck on Rosie's head. But Rosie didn't lose her composure for a moment. Composure means staying calm instead of crying or yelling or making a fuss. And that's very hard to do when you have centipedes crawling down your arms and snails and slugs in your hair. Finally, seeing Rosie for the special person she was, Alec realized something about himself. He was a mean skunk. Shamefaced, for the first time, he told Rosie he was sorry. And from that day forward, he turned over a new leaf. At the time, Rosie wondered if this was possible. But weeks went by, and then months, and Alexander continued to be nice. Just before Mrs. Millicent sent him away to a boarding school called Practor Academy, Rosie decided he really had changed. Now, sadly, she realized he had not. She stared blankly into the garden around her, feeling disconsolate, really sad, and wondered what to do. Would Alex give Mrs. Millicent her freedom when he received the ransom? Or would he play some new trick? Would she herself be in danger? Should she ask for help from the police after all? Just when she was beginning to despair of an answer, her gaze came to rest on the great blue Hubbard squash she was growing once again to enter into the biggest squash contest at the Tunbridge World's Fair. Suddenly, she knew what she had to do. Oh, I wish I had a friend who could help me, she cried. Sure enough, the back of Rosie's neck tingled, and she heard a poof behind her. When she turned around, Backfire Bob sat on the top rail of the garden fence, grinning and chewing on a piece of orchard grass. Well, Rosie, sure it's good to see you now, lass. Do you have trouble, or did you just miss old Bob? Backfire Bob, oh, it is good to see you. I didn't know if the wish would still work after all this time. It always works if your heart is pure and if you're in dire need. What's the trouble, lass? It's Alexander Foolscap again. He's done something really awful this time, Bob. He's kidnapped Mrs. Churchill. Oh, now, that is serious, isn't it? Said Bob, rubbing his chin thoughtfully. And what does he ask for a ransom? He wants $500 and 5 pounds of gummy bears. I'm supposed to pawn Mrs. Churchill's silver and bring everything to the old house at the end of Bilker Street. When? Asked Bob. Tomorrow after sunset. Mused Bob. This sounds off to me, lass. I this leaf think something is rotten in the state of Denmark, as think Alex is behind this. At this, Rosie looked puzzled. Rotten? In Denmark? She asked. What's Denmark got to do with it? Just a saying from the bard, lass. You know, that Shakespeare fellow. What I mean is, this doesn't add up. I had a chat with Alex before he left for Practor. I felt sure he was sincerely sorry for all the tricks he'd played on you. How do you know it was him? He left a note. It was his handwriting, I'm sure of it. I see, said Bob, and he cogitated some more. Cogitate means think, of course. He cogitated and cogitated, and he cogitated some more, and finally he spoke, and Rosie knew Backfire Bob had a whopping good plan, and everything was going to be all right. Put Mrs. Churchill's silver in a sack, he said, and go down to Sketcher's. Only give Mr. Sketcher her things if he agrees to hold them for 2 days without selling them. We probably won't need the money, but we'd better have it just in case. I'll meet you tomorrow, just before sunset, at the old house, and we'll see what we shall see. Now, before you leave the garden, please pick some spinach. You should get Tug to eat something besides home fries for dinner. If you don't, that boy's going to turn into a potato himself. Rosie looked at the row of spinach and saw that the tops were getting ready to bolt. She turned back to Bob, nodding her head, but he had vanished. The only sign he had been there was a small ring of smoke. And then that, too, disappeared in the small gust of air that suddenly stirred the spinach and carrot tops. Chapter 3. Rosie slept late the next morning because the sun was hidden behind a huge fog bank that had rolled into the Frankie Valley overnight. The day passed like an inchworm slowly working its way along a tree branch. But finally the sun lowered in the west, and it was time to leave. By 7 o'clock, she and Tug were riding their bikes in the rain down Bilker Street. When they leaned their bikes against one of the giant elm trees that stood on either side of the walk, going up to the porch, Backfire Bob stepped out from behind the other one. Tug took the bag of gummy bears from the basket hanging from his handlebars. "Do you have the money, Rosie?" asked Bob. She nodded, and he motioned for the two of them to follow him. A board creaked under Tug's weight as they climbed the steps, and Rosie felt uneasy. Someone was watching. She was sure of it. They stopped in the gloom of the front hall and let their eyes adjust to the shadows. A doorway opened into a parlor on their left, and a hallway led beyond it to the back of the house. Immediately in front of them, a stairway led to the second floor. The dark wood of the banister was polished smooth by years of sliding hands. A plush red carpet covered the stairs. Rosie stepped forward and rested her hand on top of the newel post. Suddenly, a black chest the size of a shoebox dropped like a giant spider from the darkness above. Hanging from a string, it scribed small circles in the air like a carpenter's plumb bob. At the same time, a sinister voice boomed out a greeting. It was the voice of a goblin, perhaps, or of a criminal mastermind, and Rosie shivered to hear it. "Ah, my old friend, Backfire Bob! So glad you could join the party. Now you are trapped. Tell your little friends to put the money and gummy bears in the box. Then the fun begins," the voice said imperiously. "Do it quickly, or you'll find yourselves sorry, sorry, sorry." Now, imperious is another one of those big words not everybody knows. It means with great authority or command, as when your bossy older sister or brother says, "Close your eyes and hop on one foot," when you are playing Simon Says. Backfire Bob glanced at Rosie and motioned for her and Tug to do as they had been told. "That's not Alexander Foolscap," whispered Rosie. "Who is it?" "If it's who I think it is," said Bob, "we're in trouble." "Well, who is it, for Pete's sake?" "Mean Mitch."
"Mean Mitch?"
"Yes, he's one of the fairy. One of the little people like me. But he's a renegade."
"What's a renegade?"
"A renegade goes against everybody else. Most of the little people are good, and if you treat them well, they will use their magic to help you. Then there's Mean Mitch. He does whatever he can to make people miserable. He also has an awful grudge against me because I have foiled his mean pranks many times."
"So he's like Alexander Foolscap, with magic powers?"
"Oh, yes, like Alex Squared, like Alex to the 10th power. If Alexander Foolscap were a firecracker, Mitch would be a stick of dynamite.
Now I'm thinking this really isn't about kidnapping at all. But what else could it be about? It's about revenge? Against me? Bob stared at her. I'll tell you the story later. In the meantime, don't worry. He's tried to trick me before, but it hasn't worked. Put the money in the box, and we'll find out what happens next. Rosie eyed him doubtfully. Still, she didn't know what else to do. So she put the wad of bills in the box, and Tug added the gummy bears. Then the box rose rapidly upward and returned to the darkness from which it had come. Rosie, worried that they were being betrayed, shouted bravely up the stairwell. "Where is Mrs. Churchill? Tell me where she is, you promised!" A high-pitched, cackling laugh was the only answer, and that was followed by a tremendous thumping and banging. Bob pushed Rosie through the door of the parlor so hard she fell and rolled across the carpet like a loose-limbed rag doll. Then, with not a second to lose, Bob grabbed Tug, who was too scared to move, and shoved him after Rosie. He was just in time. Five huge bowling balls came thundering down the stairs. The balls crashed into the front door, and Rosie heard the sound of splintering wood. "Holy potato bugs, Bob," cried Rosie. "We would have been smashed to bits." Before Bob could reply, a cacophony of barking and screaming came from somewhere in the second story. Cacophony sounds like what it means. Lots of noise. "That's Mrs. Churchill," cried Rosie. "No time to lose." More bowling balls came down the stairs, but she dodged them and rushed upward with Bob and Tug close behind. At the top of the stairs, they were shocked by what they saw. Halfway down the hall in front of them, Alexander Foolscap was holding the end of a rope, which ran through a pulley on the ceiling and down to a rocking chair. Tied in the rocking chair and bobbing and joggling 6 feet above the floor in the most distressing way was Mrs. Millicent Churchill. Under the chair, a big, hungry dog was leaping up and trying to bite Mrs. Millicent's feet. Beyond the chair, at the other end of the hall, a small, bow-legged man with a long, sharp nose, scowling black eyes, and eyebrows that needed combing, was gleefully rolling one bowling ball after another down the hardwood floor toward them. Alexander Foolscap, jumping back and forth to dodge the balls, was having trouble holding the rope, and Mrs. Millicent swung wildly back and forth with her eyes closed. Her eyes were frightened, and her hair disheveled in curlers and bathrobe, and she was in danger of crashing to the floor at any moment. "Stop it, Mitch!" shouted Bob above the din, "or I'll report you to the fairy princess, and you will not be allowed to attend the summer solstice fairy ball." This seemed to have no effect on Mitch as he continued to hurl one ball after another down the hall in their direction. "Ouch!" cried Tug as Run grazed his ankle. "Be nimble, boy," said Bob. And then Backfire Bob performed a most amazing acrobatic feat. After a series of handsprings which took him past Alex, past the dog, and past Mrs. Churchill, he landed on his feet right in front of Mitch. It was marvelous, and it took Mitch by surprise. Bob caught the meanie's right hand, the one about to throw another ball, and he spun Mitch around and around like a top. At the same time, he said these magic words: "Twirly-gig, twirly-gig, spin till you stop, then hop away, funny little top. Your mean tricks are over till the cows are in the clover. No longer will you roam till a year you've spent at home. To Tug's astonishment, but not Rosie's because she had seen Bob's powers before, Mean Mitch disappeared with only a whiffle of dust floating in the air where he had been a moment before. Rosie strode forward to the vicious dog, who now sat on his haunches looking confused. When Rosie scratched him behind the ears, he licked her face and nuzzled her. "His name is Ralph," said Rosie, peering at the tag on his collar. Satisfied that his foster mother was safe, Alexander Foolscap lowered the chair to the floor, and Tug untied his poor trembling mother, who said twice for emphasis, "I will never sit in a rocking chair again. I will never sit in a rocking chair again." Chapter 4. Everyone was too tired to do anything else but go home and go to bed. Rosie found the black chest and gave Mrs. Millicent Churchill the $500 so she could buy her silver and candlesticks back. Then she gave Alex the gummy bears because Alex had also suffered at the hands of Mean Mitch. Scared out of his wits by Mitch's powerful magic, he had been forced to write the note and then hold the rope with Mrs. Millicent dangling from the other end. He had been petrified he would drop her and Mrs. Churchill would be bitten by Ralph. Backfire Bob had some dog biscuits in his pockets. He said he always carried them for such occasions, and he gave one to Ralph because he figured Ralph had also been forced to be part of Mitch's malevolent plan. Malevolent is a good word to substitute for evil, or really, really mean and bad. Then Bob called a taxi for Mrs. Churchill and Alex, and Rosie and Tug rode their bicycles home. Bob, of course, could travel by magic, and he arrived at Mrs. Churchill's house before anyone else and promptly fell asleep on the couch. The next morning, before he left, Backfire Bob had tea and crumpets at the breakfast table and talked about why Mean Mitch wanted revenge. "We are brothers," said Bob. "What?" interrupted Rosie, who could not have been more surprised if she had received an elephant for her birthday. "Yes," said Bob, "and Mitch always thought Mum liked me best. Plus," he admitted guiltily, "sometimes I went into his room without permission and took his comic books to read." "That's it?" asked Tug in disbelief. "He wanted revenge because you took his comic books? I can't believe it." "The little people are very sensitive," said Bob, "and if their feelings are hurt or they feel they have been wronged, they remember for a long time and they don't forgive easily." Alex nodded his head because this sort of thing had happened to him. But now, thank goodness, he had learned how to let go of a grudge and had even learned how to smile at people. Mrs. Millicent nodded her head too, and where she was so often jumpy and a little dotty lately, this morning she was remarkably calm and clear-headed. Apparently, the scare of the previous evening had the surprising effect of making her feel grateful rather than hysterical, and had ordered her wits instead of scrambling them. And so, everyone munched happily on hot buttered crumpets with strawberry jelly and drank Lapsang Souchong tea, which has a wonderful smoky flavor, and talked about their good fortune in having escaped the clutches of Mean Mitch, and in adding a new member to their household. A fact which made Ralph smile as he chewed on a beef bone Mrs. Churchill had been saving for soup broth. To make Alex feel better about his unhappy time with Mean Mitch, Rosie suggested that Ralph be his dog, and Alex was so delighted he hugged Rosie, which was something he had never done before in his whole life. Then he telephoned the headmaster at Practor Academy and learned, to his surprise, that Ralph could live with him at school. They were all so content that no one even thought twice when Backfire Bob excused himself and went out to sit on the porch. The funny little man sat in Mrs. Churchill's rocker, knowing she would not want to sit in it herself, and blew smoke rings to his heart's content. When the odor of the pipe tobacco wafted in through the living room window, Rosie decided she had one more question to ask Bob. She opened the screen door and saw the rocker still moving slightly, but Backfire Bob was gone, and only a single smoke ring lingered above his chair. The end.
Having a bit of a spooky October story reading here this morning. I am so lucky to have a real live author here in the station, we have Alec Hastings, who just finished reading the second story in Rosie and the Little Folk, which is one of three books that he's written. And so we have a little time to talk, Alec. Please tell me more about this story. I loved that story.
I'm delighted that we have a chance to talk a little bit. And I was just saying to Amy, and now to you listeners out there, that I wanted to mention Barbara Carter. Since we can see each other here in the studio, I mentioned to Amy that this book was a project that I did with a friend, a woman named Barbara Carter, who has since become a friend. And she did illustration. She did pictures for the book, which are wonderful. If the story that I just read, the scene where Rosie dashes up the stairs to rescue Mrs. Millicent Churchill, her foster mother, when she reaches the top of the stairs, she sees Mrs. Churchill in the chair that's hanging from the ceiling, and Mean Mitch is in the background rolling bowling balls, and poor Alexander Foolscap has his hands on the rope to hold Mrs. Churchill from the snapping jaws of the terrible Ralph. And that whole picture that I hope is in your mind is also in a picture in the book. So I just wanted to mention the wonderful illustrations by my friend Barbara.
Oh, so you are a little bit like Rosie, collecting friends as
yes.
you go through life.
Yes. How I happened to meet Barbara is another little story in itself. I wrote a story for the annual Christmas story contest in Randolph. The local paper, The Herald, has this story contest every year. And I wrote a story about one of Santa's elves, an elf named Elmer. And Elmer is as an elf, he's a cousin to Backfire Bob, because elves and leprechauns are they're much alike. And Elmer was a little bit of a grumpy elf, but he was a very helpful elf to Santa. He just was one of those people that had to grouse a little bit, but in his heart, he was a good elf. He was one of Santa's favorite helpers. And so there is a story about Elmer and Santa doing their rounds at Christmas, and it happened to win the contest that year. And much to my surprise, when I opened the newspaper and saw that, the story had pictures. And there was a wonderful, wonderful picture of Elmer. And I was so in love with these pictures for that story that I called Barbara Carter. I called the newspaper and found out how to get in touch with Barbara. And we met and decided to do this book, Rosie and the Little Folk, together.
Wow. So you collected an illustrator friend, and you used a new word for me, grouse, around.
Oh, grouse. Yes. That's acting in a grouchy way, maybe talking in a grouchy tone, or just acting like, I don't know if anyone's ever seen The Muppets, but maybe if you have, you'll remember Oscar, the Muppet who lived in the trash can, and he was known as the Oscar the Grouch, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I love the way that you work in these new words, because I was able to learn some new words reading your story. So you collect new words and you collect friends?
I do. Once upon a time, I was an English teacher, and it was my job to collect new words and share them with other people. And so I've just, you know, it became a habit. I just have never been able to rid myself of this habit.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay, because Rosie is a good role model that way. You know, collecting Ralph the dog, she made a new friend.
And, yes.
And Alex, she came to a new level of their friendship in
yes.
the story. And Tug has got her back now, which
yes,
I
yes, yes. He was part of the rescue team.
Yeah. And these names that you came up with, how do you come up with the names for your characters?
Oh, I just love names. Rosalind Beecham Puddlejohn is Rosie's real name. Kind of silly, I suppose. But I've read lots of stories over all these years, and I'm sort of an old man. You can't see me since you're listening to me on the radio, but I'm 70 years old, and I have not only children but grandchildren. And so I've been reading all this time, and I had many stories read to me as a little boy, and I've read many stories to my children and grandchildren, and in all the books I've read, I've just always delighted in names, so I collect those too.
Yeah, and we were talking about how you came up with your ideas before we came on the radio, and you mentioned laying on the rug, playing with, was it your granddaughter?
Yes.
And was it Legos? What did you say you were?
We had Legos and Lincoln Logs and little Lego people.
Oh, cool.
And I had written the first story in the Rosie series for one of the older grandchildren, Devin, who was just in her soccer playoffs yesterday. And congratulations to her on a good soccer season. And then one day, one of the other grandchildren, Charlotte, who I think was about six at the time, she came to visit with her mom, Katie. And we were playing on the rug with all these little Lego people. And I had to think of names for the Lego people. So there was a cowboy, and I called him Cowboy Sam. And I think there was a dog, and we named him Joe Bob. And so pretty soon there was a horse named Peapod, and they became characters in another story in the Rosie series. So these things just have a way of taking on a life of their own, these stories.
Yes, and I love that play is one of the ways to invent stories.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, I was thinking about this story this morning being a scary story, and isn't it funny how a scary story can also be fun and funny if you have a little sense of humor, which is something that I love to laugh, and I love to hear other people laugh. And so I always try and have some humor in my stories.
Right. It was perfectly timed and crafted. And so there are a couple more stories in this book, which is called Rosie and the Little Folk by Alec Hastings. If you want to go out there, folks, and get it and read the rest of the book. There are two more stories, one involving the cowboy character that he just mentioned.
Yes, I have to pass along one thing about, I have two other books, yes, which you can find online or at bookstores. This particular book, I never really intended it to be marketed. I wrote it for my grandchildren, but I did have it printed in Barrie at Brown Printing, L.C. Brown. It's a beautiful little paperback, but the only way that you can get this book is to write to me.
Oh, okay.
So I should probably share my email?
Yeah, would that be fine?
Yeah, it's Alec, A-L-E-C, W, Hastings, Hastings, at hotmail.com. And all those, all that is in lowercase.
Fantastic. And if you don't mind, over the next few months, I might sneak in the rest of the book.
Absolutely.
I do love reading, and these are really fun stories to read because you're just, the writing is so fun and
great,
humorous. I love that too. So tell us about your other two books, because you've written three books, and one of them was for your students, right?
Yes. Yes. The first one I wrote 9 years ago. I had a number of young men in my high school English classes who, I'll just say they weren't necessarily in love with reading the way I was. I had to learn how to become a teacher. It took me a while, and my students helped teach me. Mm-hmm. And I realized that being a teacher really isn't about subject matter. It's about making friends with people again. And, I was much older than my students, but we had a sort of a friendship, I think, after a time. Once I got to know, once I got to remember that I was once a teenager myself, and I began to remember how it felt. And I remember that it was really important to show them respect and ask them what they thought about things. So over time, I would talk to them about these, the work that we were trying to do in an English class and storytelling and reading stories. And some of the boys who I could relate to, they dressed the way I did when I was at home with work boots and blue jeans, and they really admired, I think, working people. And I had a lot of hands-on work experience in my life. So anyway, I would say, what's the last book you read? And they would say, well, I think it was Hatchet by Gary Paulson in fifth grade. And of course, that had been quite a few years before they arrived in high school. And they just didn't really love some of the books that were available to them to read in high school. So I wrote this book, Otter St. Ange. And there's a character who's a little bit like Backfire Bob or Huck Finn, maybe, if you've ever heard of The Adventures of Huck Finn. And his name was Otter St. Ange. So the book is Otter St. Ange and the Bootleggers. And it's about a boy and his grandfather who go looking for his father who's been missing.
Wow. Yeah, and I just got a copy of it, guys. So I am so excited to read that. Can you say that again? Otter St.
Otter, as in the animal, the playful otter. Otter St. Ange and the Bootleggers.
And the Bootleggers. That's so exciting. So that's the second book. And the third one is?
The third one is Cap Pistols, Cardboard Sleds, and Seven Rusty Nails.
Oh, great.
And that's a story about growing up in Vermont in the 1950s and 60s when we make sleds out of cardboard and we use something, these things called cap pistols that one of my daughters had to ask me what they were because they're not around anymore. And I stepped on seven rusty nails when I was a kid.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
You'd think I would have learned.
Right. Oh, not all at once.
Not all at once.
Oh, my goodness.
No, separate times.
Well, we have to learn one way or another, right? And just like Mean Mitch, who's now apparently grounded for a year,
yes.
It sounds like, we all learn in different ways.
Yes.
And story reading and storytelling is one of the best ways. So I am so honored today to have had Alec Hastings come on and read his story for us. And we do have some things in common as far as Scotland and fairy folk and Findhorn over there, where grown-ups actually believe in fairies over in Scotland. There are some grown-ups up there.
Yes, we've been telling each other stories even off the air.
Yeah, so this has been such an honor, guys. Thank you for joining me for Amy's Kids Show. Please look up Alec Hastings and find more of his stories, and I will be reading as many of them as I can squeeze in on this show because they are just fantastic. And remember, folks, you are fantastic, too. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. We're going to continue next week. Who knows who's going to come on the show? I mean, we've had Blue Hubbard Squash and leprechauns and a real live author today. and potato bugs. I almost forgot to mention, we've learned about potato bugs here on Amy's Kids Show, and you included them in the story.
Absolutely. I was picking potato bugs when I wrote the story. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yes, and thank you out there for picking the potato bugs and making the grilled cheese and the pancakes and, you know, for your brothers and sisters and everything that you do out there to take care of everybody that you love, including potatoes and Blue Hubbard squash. And keep your eyes out for leprechauns. It is that time of year, and magic is afoot. So thank you, folks, for joining me. This is Amy's Kids Show. We'll be back next week with more fun. And remember, of course, you are the greatest.
money banks of life. Sunshine and the water is free.